This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Bonnie North. Shopping malls in the United States are facing an uphill battle. As online sales have boomed over the past decade, traditional brick-and-mortar stores have seen declining profits and rising rents. But in many ways, this is just the latest chapter of evolving consumer habits and trends. And perhaps there's no better example of this progression than at Bayshore Town Center in Glendale. Tom Dakin is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He wrote about the latest development at Bayshore. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers and starts by explaining how the mall has changed since it was first built in 1954.
It was an outdoor strip center back when shopping centers were being built. That's how we did them. You'd have something like Kmart or maybe Penny's as an anchor, and all the storefronts faced outside. Then it got converted into an indoor shopping mall, much like we built in the 60s and 70s. If you think of places like Brookfield Square, Southridge, Bayshore became that in the mid-70s. And then about a little over a decade ago, it was transformed again, this time into a town center. And with a town center, what you did is they kept the old portion of the mall, but then they built all these additional buildings that had an internal kind of traditional street grid, much like you'd see in a downtown area within the mall itself. And you had sidewalks and you had ways to encourage people to walk around once they got to the property. They built parking ramps, which were new for that area, and in order to allow for more development because, you know, you need less land for parking when you go from surface lots to parking ramps. So that all happened in about 2006. The city of Glendale put up quite a bit of money to help make this happen, spent the money up front through a tax incremental financing district, through the expectation that then the new property tax revenue generated by the town center would repay that debt over roughly 20, 25 years. And then once that's done, you have all this new property tax base for your community, for your school district, et cetera. Well, unfortunately, within about 2 years, we're in the middle of the worst recession since the Great Depression. And then on top of that, Amazon and other online retailers kept growing and growing and growing. And as a result, at this point, Bayshore has a pretty high vacancy rate, about one quarter vacant. They had some major anchors, Sears, Boston store close. And as a result, the value of Bayshore declined considerably. So it's no longer providing the same level of property tax revenue to pay down the city's debt. The ownership of Bayshore went from Mall Properties Incorporated out of New York to the lender to the development, American International Group, AIG, also out of New York, very large financial services provider. Essentially, it was a deed in lieu of foreclosure. I mean, basically, the owner tossed the keys to the lender and said, here, take it. It's yours now. We can't pay the debt. We're not going to pay the debt any longer. So AIG at that point had a decision to make. The entity, the small investors group that controlled the property that AIG now owned, that entity could have declared bankruptcy, and that would have been a very, very bad thing for the city of Glendale. I wouldn't be surprised if that would have resulted perhaps in the city itself declaring bankruptcy, because the city would have been saddled with no means of collecting that large debt. And, you know, as a city, you still have to pay your firefighters, your police officers, your sanitation workers, et cetera. Luckily, AIG saw some value in that property. And instead, through a series of negotiations between AIG and the city, there was an agreement created, which has just now been approved by the Common Council and the mayor in Glendale. And that agreement essentially said AIG agrees to wipe off the city's remaining debt, $57 million, wipe the slate clean. But in return, what AIG wanted was the city to help them finance now this latest reincarnation of Bayshore. This time around, the city is going to finance only if the improvements are made. So instead of the city spending, say, $30 million up front, the city spends that money in stages, again, through the new property tax revenue generated by this latest series of improvements. So the city is mitigating its risk considerably this time around. And in return, AIG is taking that money plus money it has and money it's borrowing from PIMCO, which is a very large investment manager out of Southern California. And they are going to tear down the old mall. They're going to relocate the few tenants left in that old mall into current vacancies in some of the newer buildings they built. And then they're going to make some of those newer buildings look better. They're really going to pay attention to these sort of public gathering places at Bayshore. So if you're familiar with the Rotunda area near what used to be the movie theater there, they're going to make that better. They're going to actually put in escalators, which surprisingly they don't have. They are going to improve the public square. That sunken fountain that's been there is gone, which is probably a good thing because what that effectively meant is during the winter months, the public square was inoperable. Now it's going to be open year-round. They're going to green it up. They're going to put in a big LED screen, kind of like what you have at the plaza over here at the Fiserv Forum. And the whole idea is to make it look better, make it a place where people want to be, where people want to gather, make it more pedestrian-friendly for people to circulate throughout the area. And then in addition to that, they will sell off parcels that are created through the demolition of the old mall, the partial demolition of Boston Store's old building, and then you still have the parcel left over from where the former Sears was torn down. And the idea is they'll sell off those parcels to other people, other companies who will develop, will probably get apartments there. I think that's probably going to be the greatest demand for new use there. We might even get a hotel as a possibility. So it's really now truly going to become a mixed-use development. When all is said and done, it's going to be quite a bit different than what it is now.
You know, you talked about a lot of the history of the Bayshore Mall there. And like I would guess the vast majority of malls in the country right now, it's gone through a lot of different changes, in part because the way we shop has evolved,
right.
The things we're looking for in those places has evolved. How does this redevelopment compare to other things we've seen, specifically in the Milwaukee area?
Well, we just mentioned a couple of them, and you know, Whitestone Station in Menominee Falls is something like that, where you have that mix of uses, and the retailers there are retailers that are driven not so much by like high-end fashion, but just like everyday type necessity. Like the big anchor, what made Whitestone Station work initially was Costco. Costco's a very large, I mean, you know, they're like very large footprint. They sell everything under the sun. In the case of 84 South, it was largely driven, I think, by Steinhoffel wanting to have a new upgraded store, but also Kohl's wanted to be in there. Kohl's wanted out of Southridge Mall. Kohl's likes to be in standalone locations, so that helped drive that. Now, the Corners is kind of the exception. The Corners was driven by Von Maur, which is higher up the fashion chain for your listeners who are familiar with that. So it's not always the case. But and in all these places, you're also getting retail that's not stores, but more like restaurants, a lot of dining components to these places, a lot of entertainment components to some of these places. And that's what's helping drive the revival of some of the suburban shopping malls. Brookfield Square, you probably know, they're about to get Whirly Ball in there. They're about to get a Marcus Theater and Restaurant Complex. There's a Marcus Theater Restaurant Complex now at Southridge, which also has kind of a game-oriented entertainment center there as well. And again, that's a reflection of what you were just talking about. People are spending less money buying things, but they still like to do things. And that's a big part, again, of what's driving Bayshore. I think what we're going to see at Bayshore is probably a lot of those vacant spaces are going to be filled by food and beverage type businesses. The one big news store we know is going in there is Total Wine & More. They're going to take the old Sports Authority building. So that we do know. But I think a lot of these are going to be food and beverage and more entertainment-oriented type businesses as opposed to places selling stuff.
I will say, when I go to Bayshore Mall, which I do actually with some frequency, I specifically go there for Trader Joe's.
Oh, yeah. That was a big win for them. I mean, and a store like Trader Joe's, think of how often you go to supermarkets. They drive a lot of repeat business. I mean, I don't know how often you go shopping for clothes, but you probably, I'm almost sure you go shopping for food a lot more often than you go shopping for dresses, skirts, pants, you know, accessories, et cetera, right? So,
yeah. So, you know, we've been talking about how shopping trends have really changed over time. And we look at certain malls that are still doing well, despite the fact that shopping trends have changed. I'm specifically thinking of Mayfair Mall over in Wauwatosa. What are they doing differently? Are they doing anything differently?
Well, number one, Mayfair Mall is lucky. Let me back up. Their managers are very good, but it also helps to be lucky. It helps to be located smack dab in the geographic center of the Milwaukee metropolitan area. When you're on Mayfair Road at that location, you're roughly equal distance to a lot of different communities that have a fair number of middle and upper middle class households. That's a great location for them to be. But in addition to that, in part because of that, but also because, you know, people running it are good at what they do. They've drawn some good anchor retailers. I mean, the big win for them was Nordstrom. I mean, Nordstrom is a legit type retailer that will actually draw other retailers to your mall. You can't say that about everyone, but you can definitely say it about Nordstrom. Other retailers will want to, as they say, co-locate if there's a Nordstrom at your mall. So that helped because, look, they got Container Store now. That's a big part of what helps them. And, you know, they've done a good job of getting dining options. And then right now, more recently, they have very wisely opted to redevelop that building on their perimeter, the old office building, into what's going to be a very, very nice high-end hotel. Now, they're doing that in partnership with the developer that's coming in. Kyle Striggins and his partners are doing that. HKS Development is the name of the company. But it's going to be a gorgeous Marriott Renaissance hotel, the only one of its kind in our area, chef-driven restaurant, rooftop, you know, meeting room, et cetera. You know, that can't help but help your mall, right, when you get something like that on the perimeter. So, yeah, and should toss in, the city has helped out. The city helped make that happen with some TIF financing. And the city, the common council, and the mayor there made it quite clear that they didn't like the first plan, which was to tear down the building, put up some kind of middle-tier type restaurants. They said, hey, we can do better than this, and we will help you with the TIF district to do better than this. And so, voila, now you've got a gorgeous hotel going in there that's going to add more value to the property.
When I look at Mayfair especially, you know, you mentioned the dining options, and something that sticks out to me when I compare it to other similar malls, similar insular malls, is a lot of those dining options are actually accessible from outside of the mall. They are more permeable. How important is that in the design of more modern malls?
Well, it's very important. I mean, first of all, it gives those restaurants a ton of visibility. You know, you could drive by a mall, it could have a great restaurant, and you wouldn't know it's there. And we see that other properties. Brookfield Square is a good example, where you have a lot of restaurants that in the past decade or so have been built on the periphery. And it's interesting, if you go to Brookfield Square, it can be a little dead inside the actual mall itself, but there can be a lot of activity just on the outside at all those different restaurants on the periphery. And I'm sure Whirly Ball and the Marcus Cinema will have a lot of that activity as well.
When we look at the redevelopment of many of these malls and even urban malls, what do we see as the future of how we design these spaces?
I think a big thing that developers and mall operators have a better appreciation for that they didn't have even 10 years ago is public space. And you really see that vividly illustrated with Bayshore. Bayshore, yeah, they built the little town center, but that was really about it. The rotunda area indoor kind of. When I was at a presentation this week, Kirk Williams, the gentleman with Cypress Equities, and that's the Dallas space firm that AIG has hired to basically do this project, because Cypress, that's what they do. They do development. Kirk put up a slide at this presentation and said, what do you see there? What don't you see there? And what you don't see there is green space. And that, he said, you know, if you were starting over today and doing this, you wouldn't do it that way. You would definitely carve out more public space, because, yeah, you don't make money per se on public space. You're not renting it to a retailer, but you're improving the value of your property because people want to be there. I mean, that's the important thing. Look what's happening right now with the former Grand Avenue. I literally walked past on my way over here for this interview at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue and Old World 3rd Street, what used to be the main entrance of the Grand Avenue. We all know what used to be there, right? The giant glass aquarium that was built, ironically, not built when it was originally opened. When it originally opened in 1982, it had a much more graceful, kind of meets the street appropriately type entrance. But in 2000, 2001, that was during a period when all the rage was to build these ridiculous big glass boxes, as if to say to your potential patrons, I don't know, come on and get trapped inside. I don't know what they were thinking. But at any rate, I suppose it's to make some kind of visual mark. Well, it made a visual mark. It looked horrendous. It'd be like, you know, you put a scar on your face and say, hey, notice me. So what's happening now is the glass box is gone. We're going to create a much more gradual sweep from the street up to the main entrance, which was there, ironically, again, when it first opened. We've removed part of the old Applebee's restaurant. We're going to create a much more appropriately scaled entrance. And we're going to create a public square there. We're going to literally have public space there. It's going to blend into the beer garden that's going to be part of the food hall, Third Street Market Hall, which is going to be sort of the signature development at the Avenue. So, I mean, there'll be some of that space will be for patrons of the beer hall, but it will kind of blend into the public space. And if you want to go and sit in that public space all day and hang out, you're not only free to do so, you'd probably be encouraged to do so because, again, they want people to feel welcome. If you feel welcome there, usually you're going to end up spending money there as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that developers really have a better appreciation for now than they had in prior mall building periods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Tom Dakin, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Tom Dakin reports on commercial real estate for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers. You can hear more of our conversations with Dakin about development in the Milwaukee area at WUWM.com.